Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
The best song wasn't the single, but you weren't either. Living in Ladera Heights, the Black Beverly Hills, domesticated paradise.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. Last week, we spoke with New York Times pop music critic John Caramonica about his Grammy predictions. And when it came to Album of the Year, he had this to say.
I would love if Frank won, but my feeling is one of these less good rock bands will win.
Mountain night, keeping it surreal. Not sugar free, my TV ain't HD, that's too real.
Frank, of course, being the R&B singer Frank Ocean, who in fact did not win the Grammy for Album of the Year. Mumford & Sons took that prize. He also didn't win Best New Artist or Record of the Year. In fact, of his six possible Grammys, he walked away with two. One for Best Urban Contemporary Album and Best Rap Song Collaboration. And he gave a rather interesting performance. Jeff Himmelman recently wrote about Frank Ocean for the New York Times Magazine. He joins me now on the line from Washington, D.C. Jeff, welcome to Soundcheck.
Thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
Let's talk about his performance. You mentioned at one point in your piece for the New York Times Magazine that Frank Ocean agreed to perform at the Grammys only if he could choose the song. Is that right?
That is correct. And he made that very clear, and his managers made that very clear also. That was indeed the case.
Now, did you get a sense that there were any nerves involved? Because to me, he seemed kind of nervous out there.
So when we spoke about his performance in advance, I knew ahead of time it was not allowed to reveal that he was going to be singing Forrest Gump at the awards ceremony, and they were going through that negotiation with Grammy people while I was out there. And at the time, his logic made a lot of sense. He just thought it was a more joyous song to sing. I think the Grammy people were more interested in having him do one of the bigger ballads off the record.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to do Forrest Gump because he thought that was more reflective of where he was in his life. And then, sort of mysteriously to me, he kind of turned it into this piano dirge with no percussion to speak of. And kind of lost his way a little bit halfway through the song, I felt. And I definitely perceived some nerves, too, which is surprising to me because he projects such confidence when I was with him.
Mm-hmm. Although you did sort of indicate elsewhere in the piece that in Frank Ocean's remarkable arsenal of musical talents, live performance is still pretty much a work in progress.
That's right. I mean, he has played, I think, I don't know what the exact number is, but it's maybe 20 shows, 25 shows in his entire life. And you look at some of the other performances that were at the awards ceremony. And I mean, these are people who've played thousands of shows, and you could tell.
Yeah.
And I think for Frank, he's an unbelievably precise and deep recording artist. I think getting his live confidence up is going to be a real task for him. And I think on Sunday night, that was a pretty clear example of the fact that he still has a way to go there.
So we're talking about Frank Ocean's performance of Forrest Gump featuring one of the more memorable whistling solos in Grammy history.
That's true. I actually quite like that part. And I thought the visuals were stunning.
Yeah, yeah.
It was a great concept, and I know they put a lot of work into trying to make that come off. I think maybe he had some sound problems on the stage, or I don't know what it was, but it was very clear that he was having a hard time keeping track of the melody about halfway through the song.
Let's hear a little bit from Frank Ocean's performance at this weekend's Grammys.
And this is love, I know it's true. I won't forget you.
That is Forrest Gump, the song, performed live at the Grammys by Frank Ocean, who was nominated for 6 awards, including most of the big ones, ended up walking off with 2 Grammys, Best Urban Contemporary Album and Best Rap Song Collaboration, for the song No Church in the Wild with Jay-Z and Kanye West. We're speaking with Jeff Himmelman, who wrote the cover story on Frank Ocean for last weekend's New York Times Magazine. And Jeff, you know, Frank Ocean, very much a critical darling. His album Channel Orange did get very close to the top of the Billboard charts, but he's hardly been on the radio. Would you guess that for the majority of viewers on Sunday night that this was their kind of real introduction to Frank Ocean?
I think it probably was. I think in some ways, even though the album has been so critically acclaimed, I think, you know, there are a lot of people who, when the article came out last weekend, really didn't know who he was. And I think that was true of the Grammy viewership as well. If you watch the promos for the show, they didn't really mention him until late in the game. He performed quite late. But it was very clear that they were focused on other people. And Frank was made very clear to me and has made very clear to others that radio was not really his goal with this record. And anybody who's listened to it can tell that, even though some of the more obvious single selections are about subject matter that could never be on the radio.
Right.
And he released a 9-minute, 53-second song, Pyramids, as the second single off the record, which is obviously unplayable on the radio for the most part. So he didn't actively court that audience. One song off the record, Thinking About You, was released as a single and actually has been on the Billboard charts for a long time, and that's the one that most people know if they know anything.
A tornado flew around my room before you came. Excuse the mess it made. It usually doesn't rain in Southern California, much like Arizona. My eyes don't shed tears, but boy, they pour when I'm thinking about you. Ooh, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you. You, no, no, no. I've been thinking about you. Do you think about me still? Do you, do you? Or do you not think so far ahead?
But by and large, unless you're a real music fan, Frank Ocean's kind of snuck up on you.
Yeah. And he's done it kind of on his own terms. You know, the book on becoming a pop star is you want to be marketable, you want to be likable. And
that's right.
One of the things you write about in your piece, you quote him as saying, "I have no delusions about my likability in every scenario. I know that in order to get things done the way you want them, oftentimes your position will be unpopular."
That's right.
Is he a prickly sort of guy?
What's interesting is that he's one of the nicest, most courteous people you'll meet, right? So he has his mind set on the way he wants to do something. So he's not aggressive or unkind. He was perfectly courteous with me. It's just it was very clear what we were going to talk about and what we weren't going to talk about.
Right.
And I think that's more how he is. And, you know, I talked to the head of Def Jam about Frank, and he said, you know, with Frank, it's an hourly negotiation, a weekly negotiation. The quote actually didn't make the piece, but he was saying that they're constantly battling over things because Frank has it in his mind. And both his managers, Kelly and Chris Clancy, they both said, you know, we'll say this in front of him. He can be tough.
Yeah.
But he insists on what he wants as an artist. And in today's world, where you're buffeted by everything from Twitter, instantaneous feedback, to radio, to labels, to all of that, if you can't chart your own course, I think it's pretty easy to get knocked off course. And I think the one thing Frank's been pretty successful at is charting his own course.
But as you sort of alluded to a moment ago, there are certain places he won't go. What was off limits for you when you were writing?
It was very clear that sort of a deeper discussion of his family, in particular his dad, was a very painful part of his past. His dad took off when he was little, and there's some animosity. There, I don't know if animosity is the right word, but definitely some hurt feelings. And Frank had taken to Twitter a couple weeks before I saw him to talk about a rumor that his dad was going to be suing him for $1 million, which I don't know where that came from or what became of it, because when I raised it with Frank, he basically just said, you know, we're not going to talk about that.
Mm-hmm.
So he has area, and I also didn't go deeply into the sexuality question with him, because in a previous interview with GQ, he went into the fact that, you know, he doesn't want to put a label on himself by saying that he had been in love with a man when he was 19. A lot of people just assumed that meant that he was saying he was gay, and he has not been willing to say either I'm bisexual or I'm gay or what. He doesn't want to label himself, and I knew that, and so I stayed away from those conversations going in.
Now, he has a sort of unusual, almost ambiguous relationship with the industry itself. He was signed by one of the major record labels, Def Jam.
That's right.
And that did not turn out the way you would normally expect. You know, you You sign to a record label, they put out an album. And
right.
That's not how it happened.
No, that's not how it happened. I mean, basically, the way he tells it, and Def Jam confirms this, is basically he got signed to a deal at the end of 2009 under his sort of born name. He was born Christopher Bro. His nickname was Lonnie, after his grandfather, Lionel. And he was signed as Lonnie Bro in 2009. And so everybody in L.A. who knew him as a songwriter for other people knew him as Lonnie Bro. And he was signed as Lonnie Bro, and then Def Jam essentially just never gave him a recording budget. And so he went out and used his connections and his friends to find beats and basically make a record on the cheap, which he released as a free mixtape in February of 2011. And the mixtape is what blew up. And because it blew up and he had done it himself in a very almost defiant way, he was able to then control a lot more of his career than had that record come out as Lonnie Bro under Def Jam's auspices. He would be sitting in a very, very different and much less powerful position today.
How is his position today, given what happened on Sunday night at the Grammys?
I mean, he picked up two Grammys. They weren't the ones that I'm sure he had his heart set on. I think it's, you can make a case that he really did make the album of the year. I mean, I think I would count myself in that camp. But, I mean, it's hard to fight Gotye as that record of the year because that was an overpowering song. Def Jam was hoping that he would win album of the year and it would become kind of a coffee table record, as Barry Weiss put it to me. And I don't think that happened. To people who didn't know who he was or understand what he was about, I don't think he provided much of a clue.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, short term, that may not be great for him, but I think long term, he's in a very good position. I think there's so much respect in the industry for what he is capable of doing in a studio.
So a young man still with a lot of untapped potential there.
I think so, and I hope he goes forward. And I mean, he's a very, very hardworking guy, and that much was clear to me immediately, and I don't see any reason why that's going to cease. And so I can guarantee you that he's going to solve these performance issues and anything else that's out there, because that's what his mindset is.
We've been speaking with Jeff Himmelman, the musician, journalist, and author of the cover story on Frank Ocean for last weekend's New York Times Magazine. Jeff, thanks very much for being with us.
Hey, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate it.
This is Soundcheck.
Forrest Gump, I know you're Forrest.
Tell us what you think of Frank Ocean. Were you disappointed by his showing at the Grammys? Do you think he's overrated? Leave a comment on our site at soundcheck.org.